WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Take out those magnifying glasses. Time for more fine print details from this election year budget from Albany. Like why the Working Families Party is calling it a Wall Street budget, and what now for middle school after school programs. Remember that other plank of Mayor de Blasio's education push? The Albany budget includes funding for pre-K, but the future expansion of after-school programs for middle school students is less clear. Jill Colvin, senior political reporter from the New York Observer, joins me now. Hi, Jill.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I will note that the mayor was booed after throwing out the first pitch at Citi Field yesterday, but Sam Roberts points out in the Times that every mayor is booed when they throw out the first pitch on opening day, and yet he was able to take a victory lap of sorts, unlike the Mets, at the game.
Indeed.
The charge to them was, if you're not going to agree to that plan, you have to give us the equivalent in another form. Actually gave us the equivalent in another form. They didn't nickel and dime us. They didn't give us something that was second best. They gave us what we needed.
What we're seeing so far constitutes an extraordinary and historic step forward for New York City. It's clearly the resources we need to create full-day pre-K for every child in the city. That's what we set out to do.
Full-day pre-K for every child in this city. But when he has come on the show, when he's made his 1,000 campaign appearances last year, there was always a twin clause there. Full-day pre-K and universal middle school after school. What happened to that?
Well, it was more so universal pre-K, universal pre-K, universal pre-K, and after-school programs for our middle school students. So this win for de Blasio, the way that he's framing it, for pre-K, it's very clear. There's a pot of money in the budget that is designated for universal pre-K, and New York City gets $300 of that, crystal clear. What's more difficult to determine is exactly how much money the city can get for after-school programs.
$300 million, right, is the number for pre-K.
Correct. De Blasio had been asking for an extra $190 million to expand after-school programs for middle school students. And the way that both the governor and the mayor's office are framing this is that the money can come from two and a half different pots of money that's kind of sprinkled across the budget there. And so I hate to always get into a lot of numbers, but in this case, I got to give them to you.
It's about the numbers.
Yeah. So basically, there is a chunk of money that the city gets called foundation aid. It's just general school aid. All counties across the state are getting this extra money. And New York City will get an extra $430 million of this money. Now, the city can choose to do with that money what it likes. There's a specific provision in the budget saying that that money can be used for after-school programs. But, you know, maybe the city wants to expand another particular type of program. It will be up to the mayor to decide how to use that money. Now, in addition to that, there's also this kind of more ambiguous money that we're eventually going to be getting into the budget from the legalization of casino gambling in New York City. Now, there is an estimate that eventually the whole state will get about $720 million to work with beginning in 2015-16, so we're not talking about the budget for this year. And so that's another pot of money that the city could theoretically dig into to fund after-school programs, in addition to another pot of kind of capital money that's around.
This casino gambling, it was not authorized in the election last year for New York City, but for elsewhere in New York State for now, these new casinos to be opened up in New York, they say now that the closest one to the city might be at Woodbury Commons up around the tolls there on the New York State Thruway. But But some of that money. So this is potential future money because there are no casinos.
There are no casinos yet. I mean, at this point, the entire process of even having these casinos open is very complex. The investors are not sure even right now how much money they're going to need to guarantee that they're going to invest. But more importantly, this is money that's not coming into the pipeline this year. And so de Blasio's promise to expand, you know, after-school, middle-school programs from a quarter of the kids enrolled who currently get them to more than half is not something that using this money can happen, you know, coming up in September.
The actual license to operate a casino would be between $20 million and $70 million, depending on where in the state you wanted to build it, I've read. So it's a tough thing to get off the ground. But I imagine that these will get off the ground and start generating tax revenues because casinos tend to be profitable for the owners, whether or not they're good for the communities.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the money that he's working with right now is this $430 million in extra education aid. And so we're really going to be looking now to the mayor's executive budget to find out how he decides to prioritize this money. They're clearly not framing this as the kind of victory that they're framing the pre-K programs with. But what I'm also told is that middle school, after school programs are a little bit more fluid than with pre-K programs. With pre-K, you need to secure, you know, space in those buildings, you need to hire the teachers. With after-school programs, right now what the Department of Education is doing is having these little mixtures between principals and community-based organizations who might provide programs. You know, the community-based organizations can choose to sign up. The city can choose to pair with libraries to offer them. And so it's not nearly the type of kind of infrastructure investment that's needed for pre-K.
This was going to come out. The money was going to come out of the tax on New Yorkers who make more than $500,000 a year that Mayor de Blasio wanted. It was going to cost $190 million, as you say, to have universal after school for middle school students. And like he did with the pre-K program, just to remind people of where he was, the mayor touted this funding stream that he had proposed. Here he is in early March.
This is not a small undertaking. It's not a pilot project. It's not a boutique effort for only a few schools. This is system-wide change. We know that our proposal will work. Other ideas have been put forward, but without the clear and reliable funding attached.
So that was audio from WCBS, the mayor, early now last month. And can you say with any certainty how many after-school slots he wanted? That is, how many middle school students do we have in the city who don't already have who don't have after-school programs, and how many does he project that he will actually be able to create programs for now?
Yeah, well, the idea—
are we not that far along?
The idea was to have an additional 63,000 students who would be able to participate in these programs. Right now, the mayor's office is not talking specifics at all in terms of the number of slots they're going to provide, how many students those might provide. They really haven't gone back to the drawing table yet to determine exactly what they want to do with this money. But I think it's just extraordinary when you play that clip, because that was something with the tax hike that de Blasio said again and again and again. Reporters would ask, you know, but what if Cuomo were just to write you a check for this exact amount of money that you're asking for? Would you take it? Would you take it? And he always, you know, brushed that off and said that's not a reliable stream of funding. So it's really incredible to me to watch the way that he has just been able to write off this, you know, proposal to raise taxes on the wealthiest in the city and still frame this as a significant win.
Well, it is a significant win to the extent that he got the governor to take something that was not a priority at all in Albany, make it a priority through his campaign and his election, and get the state to throw as much money as the city needs, is what the governor kept saying, to create these pre-K slots for every child who wants to enroll. I mean, that is a victory.
Oh, yeah. And for the parents, for these kids, I mean, who cares about politics when it comes to getting to put your kid into, you know, a pre-K or an after-school program?
So, listeners, if you have any questions about anything else in the finer print in the Albany budget, 212-433-WNYC, as we talk to Jill Colvin, senior political reporter for the New York Observer. You can talk about pre-K, after-school, ethics reform. We're going to get into some other things here. And if you have any questions or comments about what's emerging in this new budget, a very significant one with all these big issues on the table resolved in different ways, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. By the way, before we get off after school, do you think the mayor was ever totally serious about it, because he didn't hold news conferences as the governor was starting to move toward full funding of pre-K and say, don't forget about after school. We can't forget about after school. Hey, 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 after school, look at me. You know what I mean?
I mean, they did hold, I think, one of those, and they released a pretty extensive report looking at exactly the providers that they were looking at to implement these programs. For him, the pre-K was everything was invested in achieving that.
All right. Let's get into some of these things. You reported that the Working Families Party, that's the Progressive Party, criticized the budget as not being progressive enough. It was progressive enough, it seems, for Progressive Mayor de Blasio, but the WFP called out tax changes as being too friendly to Wall Street and the 1%, as they called them, and expressed their disappointment with the campaign finance reforms, which we discussed in the last segment. Tell us about the tax changes.
Well, Governor Cuomo, and I think what the WFP was most frustrated about here is the amount of capital and the significance that the governor really invested in pushing through, these property tax that wound up not being, but they're going to be compensated for those property tax increases so that they won't have to pay them. There's a huge package of, lowering of taxes here that apply for everything from, manufacturing businesses to renters in New York City. And I think that what you're seeing with their criticism here is this deep frustration with the governor that's coming from the left, everything from that, focus on tax cuts to his alliance with the IDC and the Republican Senate and, concerns that he's not moving in the type of direction that they want and their threats included there to perhaps run a candidate to the left of him, which probably wouldn't hurt his chances at winning election. But even the fact, that folks are right now testing in polls, the idea of a left candidate running against him just demonstrates the frustration that exists in the state.
I imagine if Andrew Cuomo is setting himself up for a potential presidential run in 2016, as some people say he might want to consider, especially if Hillary Clinton doesn't run, then he would want to have some credibility on the left to run in those primaries, wouldn't he?
Indeed. And I think that maybe the past year or so was dedicated to that, passing things like gay marriage, passing the SAFE Act, the social hot button issues that really appealed to liberal voters. And then he can also sit here and go, I invested in trying to spur business upstate. I insisted on making sure that property taxes wouldn't be hurting working families. All of those, grenades that the Republicans would immediately be throwing at him.
And universal pre-K and other things that he can point to on the progressive side. I mean, he gives a good "I'm a progressive" speech. Just listen to the State of the Union address from last year, and he's within a budget. We have a progressive agenda. And that's how Andrew Cuomo speaks, and he's got enough things to point to that he could make his case to – I can't believe we're talking about presidential primaries, but if it were to come to that, he could make his case to those voters and yet say that he's also fiscally responsible.
Oh, yeah. Even the way he decided to take the pre-K issue and to de Blasio say, what do you mean only for New York City's residents? This is not a tale of two states. I must give it to all. And he gets to emerge as the grand champion who was able to bring this to the rest of the state, despite the fact that, of the $340 million allocated, New York City gets $300 million of that.
And he'll also say, as he did on this show recently, that he negotiated the extension of a millionaire's tax statewide that was set to expire on his watch, and he negotiated a smaller but more permanent version of it with the legislature. Speaking of things that are only for New York City, here's a question from a listener who writes on our website who goes by SP from NYC. Says, please address whether it is true, as I have heard, that everyone in the state gets a property tax rebate except those in New York City.
So the property tax rebate, it's a little bit complicated, but there's a specific provision in there for renters in New York City if you fall within a specific income threshold. So there is indeed relief designed specifically for New York City. I think the people who are really upset are renters who are living outside of the city to whom it doesn't apply.
Oh, so they don't get that. If you're a property owner in New York City, you don't get the property tax rebate. Property taxes are lower in the city than they are in the surrounding suburbs as a rate. So that's one of the reasons. Also, I think that the property tax cut for everyone but New York City was supposed to be a way to balance out all the money that statewide taxpayers were going to be throwing at pre-K in New York City. Because the numbers that I had seen are that it was $300 million for pre-K in New York City, only $40 million for pre-K in the rest of the state. But that tax cut, totaling about $300 million for property owners outside the city, was supposed to be a way to make up for that.
Yeah, I mean, he's also using it as an incentive to try to get local governments to kind of cost cuts. And so it's in a very Cuomo-esque, you do this, you get a reward kind of system.
How do you get a tax credit on your rent? How will people actually be eligible for this? Any idea yet?
You know what? I have to say I don't know the ins and outs.
They're going to have to write the rules, right? I think it'll be on your New York State income tax form so that if you're under a certain income threshold, as you say, and I don't know what the number is, you can claim a certain deduction for rent that you pay up to a certain amount. So that's what that's going to be. Alex in Massbeth has a question about the budget. Hi, Alex. You're on WNYC.
Hi there.
How are things in Queens?
Oh, they're actually kind of nice and warm.
Good.
Finally.
I'm glad to hear it.
I have been told that there would potentially be a line item about governor's change stance on medical marijuana. Now, I'm not proficient with the budget at all, but I wanted to ask if there was anything that was in this budget that had been hidden, snuck in at the last minute that had to do with changes to New York State's medical marijuana policies.
You know, not that I'm aware of. I don't think that it ever made it in there.
And I don't think it did either. We had Diane Savino, state senator from Staten Island, on the show last week, who's one of the biggest proponents of that. And she said she didn't expect it to make it in at the end of the day. But Governor Cuomo has now come out in favor of medical marijuana this year, which he had not been in the past. And Senator Savino did hold out hope that it would be passed as a separate measure by the end of the legislative session at the end of June. You have any tea leaves to read on that, Jill?
It seems like he's really shifted his position on this, and at least for medical marijuana, all signs suggest that this will be moving forward.
Madeline in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Madeline.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the budget. One state senator, Feder, F-E-D-E-R, was proposing a tuition tax credit for families in New York City. Do you know what has become of that?
A tuition tax credit? Oh, you know what that was? I think you're thinking of the DREAM Act, where there's tuition assistance available to college students in New York State, but not to those whose parents brought them here illegally. And that DREAM Act failed. But in terms of any other tuition tax credit, nothing that you know.
No, nothing that I know of in this current budget.
I want to go back to the Working Families Party being discontent with Cuomo for a minute and ask you if there are any names out there for who might run as the progressive Democrat against Andrew Cuomo in a Democratic primary, which would be an interesting statewide conversation for Democrats to have, even if it doesn't result in his being defeated for the nomination or a close race. Are there any names out there?
You know, right now the polling has been using a number of, various names, including the individual who's been funding the poll. But I think what's important to note here is that, I mean, even if you look at the last election with Carl Palladino, there were still a number of kind of far-left candidates who were in this race. This was the race that gave us Jimmy McMillan from the Rent Is Too Damn High party. We had, you know, a number of other kind of fanciful candidates who are also running in this race. So it's not all that unusual for there to be kind of a whole slate of people who are up on the dais. But at this point, I don't think that any, you know, particularly credible names have emerged as folks who are actually expected to be running.
And might they actually run somebody against Cuomo in November on the working families line? Or is this just to back somebody in a Democratic primary?
I mean, it's interesting because the Working Families Party obviously wants to be able to maintain its ballot status.
You have to get 50,000 votes in a gubernatorial election
exactly.
To have automatic ballot status in the state for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and so it's a big risk for them. They need to ensure – it's a big gamble. If you're going to put somebody on that ballot, you need to make sure that they are going to garner those 50,000 votes. And does it make sense for them to back Cuomo even if they're not especially happy with his performance right now? It could be.
And it's been a big year for the progressive cause in New York City, what with the mayoral election and the city council election. I wonder if that gives the Working Families Party more power this year than they've had in the past, either to enact legislation — they're apparently not happy with how much power they were able to exert — or in an election. They've been touting themselves as a national force now, with de Blasio on the rise and making inroads, even though they started as a New York City party here in very blue New York. They're now having an effect on making politics more progressive in a number of states in the West.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were many stories that were written about how the WFP was really the big winner when it came to electing Mayor de Blasio, the role that they played in the city council speaker's race. I think that progressivism as a buzzword, you know, is something that's on the rise, not just at the city level, but nationally. You hear Obama talking about it. You hear the Conference of Mayors, when they get together in Washington, D.C., talking about this kind of sea change that's allegedly going across the country. Now, the actual impact of that is yet to be seen. I think this pre-K win, the fact that even when you have a state legislature that is controlled in the very, you know, schismed way that New York State is, with Republicans having a say, with a governor that some would argue is quite moderate, the fact that that proposal could, you know, rise the way that it did and push through, well, I think it's really interesting to see what happens on a national scale.
The Bill de Blasio, Elizabeth Warren wave. Stuck in traffic, though, at exit 23 of the thruway, which leads to the state capitol. Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Jill Colvin from the New York Observer. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I was wondering, I know Cuomo had said earlier that he was going to delay a decision on proceeding with fracking in New York State until more studies were done. And the last thing I heard was that he was going to put off the final study and decision until after this election. I'm wondering if the budget has anything that sheds light on that decision, on planning for fracking at all, and also whether anyone thinks that the latest IPCC report will have an influence on that, since carbon of any source, whether it's gas or coal, is certainly not the ideal situation if we're trying to respond to the new estimates of climate damage.
Anything in the budget with respect to fracking?
Not that I'm aware of with respect to fracking. Right now, the governor wants to have as little attention focused on fracking, I think, as possible. He wants to be coming out of this, framing these as big wins for education, for his property, you know, tax cuts. He doesn't want to be thinking about an issue as thorny for him as that.
We do note that there was an increase in the budget for something called the Environmental Protection Fund. Now, $162 million, that's an increase of $9 million. That, of course, is not a fracking policy. Are you familiar with that fund? Is that to preserve forest lands or anything particular like that?
You know what? I apologize. I'm not. He definitely stressed a couple of different environmental packages in there, but I'm not familiar with what that one's supposed to do.
All right. And before you go, the budget included a bit of legislation in it, too, that's not explicitly budgetary. Because what's a budget if it doesn't include some non-budget items? There are new penalties for young and new drivers who are caught texting. And this may be the thing that's going to affect as many people listening right now as any of the big political controversies that we've been discussing. So what's the texting law?
Yeah, I mean, these are very strong penalties. The way that this would work is if you're 16 or 17 years old, or if you're in the first, you know, 6 months of your license, if you're caught and convicted of texting while driving, you'd lose your license for 4 months. If you're caught again, you'd lose your license for a year. Think in the mind of a 16 or 17-year-old how long 4 months and how long a year is. But that's a pretty long time, and these are, you know, extremely stiff penalties. Something the governor has really been pushing over the past couple of months. We've seen a number of, both in the city and across the state, big crackdowns on texting while driving. It'll be significant for folks.
Let me go back to one thing that I think we glossed over. Mm-hmm. A tax cut, one of the tax cuts that the Working Families Party is the most unhappy with, a tax cut specifically for banks? Were you reporting on that?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, they – in addition, I mean, that's what they were specifically referring to in the statement. But I think in general, what's more frustrating to them and a lot of people is the political stock that the governor put in to this entire package as being about tax hikes. And this is in a climate where, you know, other leaders, especially in the city, are talking about a tale of two cities, about income inequality, about jobs. And it's just the conversation, the rhetoric of, you know, tax cuts isn't something that really fits into that picture.
Cutting taxes for Wall Street banks by $250 million, according to the Working Families Party statement, a reduction in the corporate tax rate, and changes in the estate tax they say, will cost New Yorkers nearly $1 billion every year. Am I right that the estate tax got pegged to the estate tax exemption got raised dramatically and pegged to inflation?
I believe so. And I think the argument that the governor made there was that basically if something wasn't done about it, then people would make conscious decisions to move out so that they wouldn't wind up being impacted that, and that, you know, in the long run, the city winds up, you know, making more money from it. But that's his perspective.
They don't peg a minimum wage hike to a rise in inflation, but they do now peg an exemption in the estate tax and how much of the estate that you leave is not subject to tax, pegged now to inflation in New York State. All right. Did we cover it?
I think we're good. I'm sure you'll cover it in the next couple of weeks.
There's going to be more fine print emerging because there is so much fine print, and it's so small.
It is very small, and it goes on for many pages.
For many thousands of pages, this new New York City budget that takes effect today. We thank Jill Colvin, senior political reporter for The New York Observer. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.